line is fantastic, but also inter-union solidarity and inter-union relationships are formed on these lines as well. It's always so nice, I know as someone who has been on strike, to see members of other organizations and other unions standing in solidarity with you. Just it gives you a sense of like warmth and comfort. And you know, it's like I said, it's one thing to see your own union members on the line with you and building those bonds, but to build the bonds within other unions is just really transformational. And I think if we're going to continue to build power together, those bonds can really be useful for us in the future.
Great. Anything else you want to say to our labor union siblings listening to the radio show?
Solidarity forever.
Thank you, Kaylee.
That wraps it up for this week's labor radio session. We've been interviewing pickets on the PCC strike line at the Cascade campus. I'm Jamie Partridge here with Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Prison Pipe.
Miss, I'm ready for the road. Put me upon the radio, I'm ready for the road. We not come for players, some touch the stage show. Fire does a bless, so them never they know. KBO around the place. No, 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 yeah. Yeah, man, I'ma say this is the KBO of Full Strength Community Radio. And you know it's Kabaka Pyramid representing and full dancing. Baby Rock family, you don't know. Kingston, Jamaica, we say. Yeah, Portland, it no normal.
All My Greatest Teacher Showed Me Love, a new mental health program hosted by Zan, providing tips and tools along with music, interviews to lighten and brighten in these uncertain times. Join the community every first and third Wednesday from 10 to 11 a.m. only on KBOO 90.7.
All you need is love to find your way.
Baby, you understand me now.
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Today we're here with Trish Jordan. Hi, Trish. How you doing?
Hi, Adam. I'm doing great.
Thank you for being on again. It's been a while, and we're always blessed with your presence and all the great work that you've been doing. Can you start us off and give us just a brief little bio on yourself and kind of how you got involved with all this great work?
Okay, so I'll try and give you the short version. I have my elevator speech, and then I have my longer speech, but my name is Trish Jordan. I'm the director for Red Lodge Transition Services. We're a culturally Pacific Native American organization. We work primarily with people coming out of jails, prisons, and treatment centers who are willing to do the work that needs to be done to transition back into society and be successful. Our goal is to help people be sustainable. And that means setting themselves up for a livable wage job, getting into housing, staying clean and sober. For many of our clients, about 95% of those folks do have substance use disorder. A lot of them have mental health issues that need to be addressed also. And so those things are really important to look at in regard to sustainability. We have a house for our women. We have a house that can, we can have up to 6 women and 1 house manager at our Oregon City facility. And then we have a house in Portland for our men that we've been doing a lot of work on. We're just finishing up the egress window and the French drain over there. And then that house will be ready to move into for our men's program. We just hired a house manager last week, and we're really excited about the men's house. That's in Portland. Yeah, we do a lot of work in the prisons. We're involved in providing culturally specific programming for the 12 state prisons. And we help coordinate and bring in the sacred foods for their annual Native American event that they have each year. And then a lot of our volunteers go in and help out with talking circles and wellbriety and a sweat lodge, bringing in special guests, just really helping people to reconnect with their culture, which we believe is a big piece of people being able to create a new life map for themselves.
Trish, you mentioned going to 12 facilities around the state of Oregon. And for people who don't know, then that's quite a journey around the state of Oregon, especially for folks who are, well, based in one particular area, and in your case, generally the Portland area. So how did all that come together to do all this work? Those are a lot of facilities to visit, having the houses and maintaining the houses, running an organization. What was the root of all this? How did that really start off?
I've been a religious service volunteer since 2000. So I've been doing this for like 24 years now. And when I started, I lived in Lewiston, Idaho. I got a phone call from the chaplain over at Eastern Oregon Correctional Institution, which is in Pendleton. And that was when they were in the middle of building Coffee Creek out here in Wilsonville for the new women's prison. They had about 150 women at EOCI in Pendleton, and they wanted to have a sweat lodge ceremony. And the chaplain said, somebody gave me your name and phone number, and, you know, would you be willing to come once a month and help out with that ceremony? And at that time, I lived in Lewiston, Idaho, which is 3 hours from Pendleton. And I was working every other weekend. I worked 12-hour shifts as a registered nurse at the local hospital in Lewiston. And I'm like, wow, do I really want to give up another Saturday? And I thought about it, and I prayed about it, and I went and talked to my elders about it. And, you know, there was a time in my life when I could have gone down the wrong road, and I was hanging out with the wrong people, and I was drinking underage, of course. And I had some really strong Native women that stood beside me and didn't judge me and got me through those hard times. And I came out the other side with a renewed sense of self-respect and of passion for embracing my culture, my Native culture, and got into going to Sundances and really learning about the spiritual practices and the way that we're supposed to conduct ourselves. You know, what are our traditions? Because a lot of times all we get is the stereotypical information. There was so much that was lost during the assimilation of Native Americans, and especially during the boarding school era. So long story short, I decided I was going to go ahead and help with that. And one of the elders that has been a religious service volunteer for a lot longer than me, Tyler Barlow, helped us build our first sweat lodge at the women's prison. And it was very oppressive. How I was treated when I went in was really concerning to me. And it made me realize that this is probably why nobody that's in Pendleton wants to help with this because of the way we were being treated. My clothing was gone through, you know, extra clothing because you have to have a sweat lodge dress and a towel and, you know, things like that when you come in was, you know, the chaplain ran his finger around the side of my towel to see if I had anything in the hem of my towel. And I'm thinking to myself, why would I ever do that? You know, I'm a registered nurse. Why would I risk my license for something like that? And I never would, but just having to dress and undress in the security officer's bathroom and walk through part of the facility in my sweat lodge clothing and then being told, oh, you can only have 6 matches for the pipe and for the fire. And the women always got the fire going with 1 or 2 matches left over for the pipe. And don't ask for anything more because you can't have it. And to give us a place with 3/4 minus gravel to build a sweat lodge on and little denim mats to sit on, it just was very oppressive. They made it hard. And we shouldn't have to struggle like that for our religious freedom, but we do. And it just made it really hard. And then to listen to these women share that they were homeless before they went to prison, that they left, most of them left home at a very young age because of the family dynamics and the violence that was going on in their own home. And them to say, I don't know where I'm going to go. I don't know what I'm going to do. No skills, you know. And then to see them release and come back into the system just really kind of broke my heart. And we got together with some of the other religious service volunteers in 2006. And we're like, well, what can we do? Well, nobody else is going to do it for us. We knew that we weren't going to get government help or state help or even tribal help on providing services for people, you know, regardless of what tribe they were. And so we decided we were going to start our own organization. And we did. We founded the organization in 2006. We received our 501c3 in 2007. And it's been a real journey. It's been a beautiful journey. It's been a difficult journey at times. It's been an awakening for a lot of people. And I know that we've saved people's lives because they've shared that with us. So it's an honor to be a part of this organization that was born out of ceremony. And the name came from ceremony. We received our name from a medicine person, and we try and conduct ourselves in a spiritual manner. We always start everything with a prayer and end with a prayer, and the connection that comes from being involved in our traditional ways of living have certainly changed my life, and it's changed a lot of people's lives. And it's just been an amazing journey, and it's amazing to see what people can accomplish. You know, we've got people who are plumbers, they're electricians, they have their own business doing carpentry work or construction work, or people who are now social workers with master degrees. So the possibilities of what people can overcome and then rewrite their life story is really truly amazing. And the folks that we're working with are survivors. They're very creative. They're used to working with very little, and they're hard workers. And if they're willing to put in the work, then we're willing to give them our time and our expertise and resources to make them successful.
So what you're saying is you're going on basically like a 20-year anniversary here.
24-year anniversary with
24.
The Department of Corrections, working with the Department of Corrections as a volunteer, and 18 years with Red Lodge, because we established that in 2006. No, it is 20 years. Wow, we better have a party, huh? May 7th, I think, is our Founders Day. So
yeah, well, awesome. you mentioned some fundraising that's up and coming. So that's also why I asked. I didn't know if that was in tandem with that. Do you want to tell us?
Well, I think we'll have to have cake at the fundraiser now that I think about it. Yes, we will have cake. So we had some flooding out at the Women's Transition Center the end of December during that last, what they call atmospheric river that came through and dumped like 4 or 5 inches of water on us in 24 hours or whatever it was. It just came through the cement walls. It just trickled in. And so a lot of the drywall had to be removed. And then when we started looking at that, we were finding other things as we were uncovering the walls. It's, you know, it's an old house. Anyway, long story short, it's about $23,000 for us to repair. And our insurance company does not cover that. Their policy, which I thought we were covered, but no, there's certain things in there that, you know, they made sure that they don't have to pay. And
the expensive stuff.
Yeah, you know, like they don't cover water seeping through the walls. Okay. They don't cover the lowest floor of the building, which would be the crawl space, but they have all these other things. Anyway, they said that we're not covered under insurance. And so we're having to use our general funding, which, you know, mostly goes for being able to pay our employees. We're having to use general funding for fixing the house. And we have a lot of repairs that we've already done on the men's house. So altogether, we'll be putting in about $100,000 of repairs on both of these houses. And May 9th, we have a fundraiser here in Oregon City at the Prince of Peace. I think it's a Lutheran church off of Myers Road in Oregon City, May 9th. That's the day before Mother's Day. So we're going to have lots and lots of things that people can come and buy for their mother for Mother's Day. And we'll have Indian tacos. And I guess we're going to have cake too, because we'll be celebrating that 20th anniversary. That's really going to be exciting. We hope to see some folks come out and celebrate with us.
And people can also find out more information about that in the organization at redlodgetransition.org.
Yeah, redlodgetransition.org. That's our website. And there's a flyer posted on the website. And we're going to start posting some of the things that have come in for the fundraiser. We've got a lot of quilts. We've got a really neat assortment of teapots and all kinds of different little knickknack stuff for, you know, people that might want to buy something special for their mom for Mother's Day. And we're going to have artwork, of course. We've got lots of artwork. So I think that we're going to have a really great day, and we hope people will come out and celebrate with us.
Can you tell us more about the housing project? Because, again, we were talking about, you know, you started the program, you go to 12 facilities, which is, I mean, that's all of them in the state, right? For adults incarcerated in Oregon?
Yeah, there used to be 14. Now there's 12 prisons, state prisons. Mm-hmm.
And then from there, then you started to offer the housing. And that started, I believe, with the women's house. And then I didn't even know that you had a men's house now. You're talking about having a second one. And how did that all start? And what does that look like? What is the model for this housing? How many people does it house at a time and whatnot?
Well, it's a real journey starting a nonprofit from scratch. And the first grant we ever got was for $500. Because I thought, oh, now we're a nonprofit, we'll get all this money. No, 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 no. You have to prove yourself fiscally responsible, and you have to make relationships with other organizations. And yeah, it's a lot of work. Anyway, we just kept saying to ourselves, we need a house for our women. We need a safe place for our women to come to after they release from prison. And in 2016, we got a grant through Clackamas County Community Development Block Grant for $150,000 for a down payment on a house in Clackamas County for our women. That was during the time when houses were selling like in 2 days. I mean, we were not able to compete with that. And they were a lot more expensive than what we could afford. So we found somebody that was willing to carry the contract, and technically he couldn't even get his house appraised because the furnace didn't work and there were other things that, you know, the house was in pretty sorry shape, but we knew we could fix the house. The land itself is almost 3 acres and it's full of mature timber, and Beaver Creek is right out in front of us. Our neighbor's meadow, Beaver Creek, runs right through there. It's beautiful, absolutely beautiful view, and just a mile and a half outside of the Oregon city limits. So it was just such a beautiful space. And when I went out there, I knew that was the place because I could feel the ancestors. They used to camp right here because here's the water source and here's, you know, the hill to help to protect from the wind. And the county helped us with another grant for the house so that we could pay off the seller and not have it be just like a lease. They didn't want to invest in that. And that was a really good thing that they did for us because it gave us 5 years to grow our organization and get ourselves up and running. And then after those 5 years, we were supposed to start paying off our mortgage to the county. And I talked with the county about it. And I said, you know, this is our biggest program. We've put over $300,000 into this program in the last 5 years. And they're like, well, we want to see your books. And I said, well, sure. I put everything together and showed them what we, you know, spent over $300,000 on. And I said, you know, we can pay this mortgage. We can go to the bank and get a loan and pay Clackamas County back for this. But wouldn't you rather us spend our money on the programming itself? And so we were able to secure an additional grant through Clackamas County to pay the remainder of the loan and use our money to continue to grow the program and provide those resources. And that's when we started talking about the men's house, because now we have the women's house paid off. We can start looking, you know, toward helping the men and doing more with the men. And it's about a 1-to-13 ratio, 1 woman to 13 men, as far as how many people are imprisoned in Oregon. And so we know that we're going to need more than one house for our men. We have one in Multnomah County. We'll eventually need one for Clackamas County and Washington County, and maybe even Salem.
So we talk about mass incarceration in general, and there's so many different populations and demographics of people, and how history has shaped those aspects of identity, you know, in prisons, how it reacts to it. And in this case, you know, you started working with the women, and in this case specifically Native women. So there's a couple things there that people might not be familiar with. How is that different? How does that look different for, you know, different people who are incarcerated based on their identities? And in this case, there's culture and there's gender. And has that changed over time? I mean, you know, there was a time where, you know, women going into prison has come up in numbers, and then also talking about, yeah, specifically with Native culture as well.
So over the last 25 years, the rate of incarceration of women has increased about 700%. So that in itself is a real huge change in demographic. Native Americans have always been imprisoned at a higher ratio than other ethnicities, particularly Caucasian. And I really truly believe that a lot of that has to do with that historical trauma. It has to do with the colonization of America. A lot of the people that we serve have substance abuse disorders. They have mental health concerns. Most of the people that we work with, came from poverty. And so, you know, you don't see a lot of people that come from wealthy backgrounds go to prison. They just don't. And it isn't that they're not out there committing crimes. They are. I think we can safely say that with what's going on in the world today. It's really, really, you know, slavery in a lot of ways, this prison pipeline is a form of slavery. And so slavery was abolished and the prison system boomed because all of a sudden it was against the law for people of color to use a certain bathroom or a certain drinking fountain or go into a certain part of town. People were targeted because of their color. And we are seeing that right now, you know, with what we're going through. We've seen it as Native people with our treaties. And people say, oh, well, you were conquered, so get over it. No, we were not conquered. We were not conquered. We have treaties, which we don't get any understanding or any education on in our schools. This is very important. Treaties are very, very important. And it means that the tribes that are still left today are sovereign nations, a very difficult concept. So anyway, we're incarcerated at a much higher rate. And we have substance abuse disorder at a much higher rate. And when you stop and think about that, well, you know, Native Americans didn't start drinking till about maybe 150 years ago. You know, we don't have that resistance or that genetic buildup of, there's actually an abnormal gene that has been developed over time that people who come from 4,000 years of alcohol, you know, have that we don't have. So it's almost like being allergic. That's the way I would like to describe it, is it's almost like an allergic reaction where, you know, just some people just can't drink. And I can't, you know, I quit at the age of 23. I started at 12 and I quit at 23. And fortunately I did. But for some people, I mean, especially young people, we've seen them drink themselves to death. We've seen that happen. They can't stop. So that mechanism for a lot of Native people isn't there. Anyway, there is a larger population. We're a very small population, you know, maybe about 3% of the entire United States is Native American. And it's very difficult to explain culture, but culture is a huge part of what guides us. And to have your cultural values taken from you, your language taken from you, your way of praying taken from you, and to be told now you need to do that this way, you need to be farmers, you need to be, you know, stay in one place, you need to worship our God, all of these things were very harmful to Native Americans. And even though African Americans have been here for 300 or 400 years, they have their own culture. They speak to each other differently. I've talked with some folks about, you know, how is it when you go into your parole officer? How is it when you talk to the, you know, a certain individual? It's different. It's different than what you would sit down and talk to your own people. And so there is very much a cultural difference in regard to whether you're Hispanic, whether you're Native American, whether you're African American, and you want people to identify with. You need people to identify with. You need to feel that the person that you're involved in has familiarity in what you have lived and what you have overcome, or what you have, your perception of the world. And so, you know, natives can be walking down the street on the totally other side of the street and they recognize, yo, there's Native, you know, and they do a little head nod and, you know, acknowledge each other. We're attracted to, you know, people who are like us. And then for me growing up, it was always, I always felt like I was walking this tightrope, you know, of growing up and trying to live in two different worlds. Just understanding people, understanding and being able to trust that, you know, that you have their best interest at heart is huge. Trust is huge, especially when you're dealing with folks that are coming out of jails or treatment centers or prisons. They've had a lot of trauma. Trust is huge. And so developing that trust and developing that ability to say to somebody, you know, just, I know this doesn't feel familiar, but this is the way we need to do it, and be that role model for that person. That's super important.
And people can find out more at the website at redlodgetransition.org. And Trish, can you mention again the information for the fundraiser in May 2026?
Yeah, I wish I had the address written down, but it's just behind the Winco parking lot, just behind Winco off of Highway 213 in Oregon City. It's the Prince of Peace Lutheran Church. And May 9th from 11 to 7, we're going to have quilts. We're going to have all kinds of different items for sale, beautiful artwork, Indian tacos. Ed Edmo's going to come and tell stories. His story time is at 1 and then another session at 4. So family friendly. There's an elevator for folks who have disabilities that can't go up and down the stairs. It's a great venue for us. So we're really looking forward to seeing everybody the day before Mother's Day.
All right. And then I'll be planning on donating that cake as well. And Trish, thanks so much. Folks, you've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at KBOO.fm/Prison Pipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Special thanks to our amazing guest and a Prison Pipeline Collective member, Karen James, for post-production. Free them all.
You're listening. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to sound like a broken record, but you are listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Listen sponsored. Now, become a member now. Become a member not only...